The trail is calling. Every turn, hill, and fallen log is screaming your name, and you're ready because you have the right type of power and agility to answer the call. Introducing the 2016 Honda Pioneer 1000, available at Cycle Shack North. It sports a best-in-class 999cc engine and the industry's only 6-speed, fully automatic dual-clutch transmission. And with 27-inch tires and well over a foot of ground clearance, the Pioneer 1000 gets you places other side-by-sides can't. Plus, with the Pioneer 1005, Honda's exclusive quick flip seats can go from a 3-seater to a 5-seater in seconds. So, no matter what your family is into, hunting, fishing, trail riding, you can do it all and more. Head on down to Cycle Shack North in Conroe and check out a new Honda Pioneer 1000. And don't forget to go big with our huge selection of quality Honda accessories. For your safety, read the owner's manual, wear a helmet and eye protection, always wear your seatbelt, and keep the side nets and doors closed. Pioneers are for drivers 16 years and older.
No matter what you ride or drive, it's all about taking it outside. So get on your bed, motor scooter, and ride. This is Outdoors with Wheels with Lynn and Donnie. Get on your bed, motor scooter, and ride. For best results, mix thoroughly with dirt, add adrenaline, then shake really well. And now, Outdoors with Wheels, here's Lynn and Donnie.
Welcome to the radio show that gives you the dirt on getting dirty. I'm Donnie Stewart.
Oh, somebody could misinterpret that. You're talking about the kind of dirt a dirt bike throws up. Good morning, everybody. I'm Lynn Beckwith.
That's right. We're talking about good old-fashioned dirt bike roost.
So dirt bikes aren't the only thing that throw roost. I know that growing up, we always talked about boats throwing roost, but I've seen some ATVs lately that are pretty good at throwing some dirt at somebody behind them, too.
Well, if you go get yourself one of those new YXZs, you'll be throwing plenty of roost. If you haven't already gotten out and got you a fix of dirt this weekend, you are missing a great opportunity. This is Rider Prime Time.
Yeah, spring has certainly sprung all over Texas. When I was driving back in from Arkansas a couple of weeks ago already, I noticed some wildflowers by the road. So I'm betting that as you head towards the hill country, there are a lot of pretty things to see.
No doubt. I bet a bunch of our fellow dirt riders saw some of those wildflowers as they rolled through West Texas this weekend.
It was an exciting weekend down at Big Bend National Park.
That's right, the annual Around the Bend Rally, which is one of the feature rallies each year in the Two Wheel Texan Forum.
Yeah, I'm really anxious to hear how that went. I would have been even more anxious if we could have gone to it. So hopefully next year, Big Bend will be on our list.
My goodness, this seems like about the third year in a row I've had to say that. It seems like just some way, somehow, something always comes up to keep us out of that. We should offer a special thanks to Gina and JT from the Two Wheel Texan Forum for stepping forward and being willing to run point on this year's rally and make it happen.
Well, that's far enough south. I'm guessing that spring's been pretty active down there for quite a while. I've heard that the temperatures have already crept well into the 90s and probably feel like they're over 100 when you're in the sunshine.
Yowza. I sure hope our friends at the rally didn't experience any of that this weekend.
All of our friends that were down in Big Bend were right at the river, right at the verge of going into Mexico.
I dare say a few of our friends did go into Mexico.
So many people have a lot of fear about traveling into Mexico, and certainly there are things to be concerned about, but overall, travel through Mexico is such an amazing experience, and we had an opportunity to visit with Steve Willis. And Steve has been riding for literally miles and miles and miles from Canada all the way down through Texas, through Mexico, and on all the way down to the furthest city you can touch anywhere in the world.
So you mean this quite literally. This is the furthest south city on the entire planet.
Yes, it is Ushuaia in South America. Ushuaia, which I may not be saying exactly right. You'll have to listen closely as Steve says it. I'm sure he says it more accurately than I do.
Well, that would stand to reason since he did go there.
Well, needless to say, there were countless stops between Texas and Ushuaia.
Well, we talk about adventures, but that is really an adventure. That is what adventure bike riding is truly all about.
Going those kind of distances through very primitive third world countries is not exactly glamorous travel. But what I heard over and over again from Steve was how amazing all of the different people he met were. And he talks, of course, about the beautiful sights. He saw some amazing things. But again, every sentence seemed to come right back to the people he met.
Yes, and the adventures he had along the way while trying to get a two-wheel vehicle across all this terrain.
There were no support vehicles. locals involved. There was nobody hauling extra fuel for him. He did have a friend that he traveled with during the first part of the journey. But a great part of this trip was all by himself on his motorcycle with anything that he could carry on those two wheels.
And not a single sponsor in sight.
No, not a single sponsor.
That sounds very familiar.
Many, many motorcyclists are out there forging their own way and seeing the world in a much more intimate way than you do when you're traveling behind glass in a car.
On roads that will take car travel.
A lot of these roads are very challenging. A whole lot of the roads that Steve and other travelers that are going through these countries are on are dirt roads, and they're dirt trails, and they get to go places that the average tourist never sees.
Yeah, you guys will have to go on our website and see a few of Steve's pictures, and you'll see just what we mean. You would not be traveling there on a four-wheeled vehicle.
And for all of you automotive lovers, make sure that you go to the website and take a look at all of the photos that Steve has brought back of old American Iron.
Yeah, the Cuba photos are wonderful to look through. They sure are. And I dig all the different motorcycle shots, too. There is a great variety of bikes from back in the 50s that are real novelties. And then there's that electric bike. I don't know whether that thing does your laundry as you ride or what, but it sure looked weird.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of very unique vehicles in all of these different countries, and especially in Cuba.
Well, Steve certainly had a lot of really cool journeys, and he definitely put the adventure in adventure biking. So let's let him tell us a story or two.
Well, I have been so fortunate to spend the last several days with my friend Steve Willis. Now, Steve and I met about, 15, 16 months ago, Steve?
Yeah, that's pretty close, I think.
Yeah, so at the time that we met, you were meeting a mutual friend, and you guys were embarking, you and Glenn were embarking, on a really huge journey. You came down from what part of Canada?
I live in an area called the Peace River District. It's about 400 kilometers northwest of Edmonton, Alberta. I'm in a landlocked province, so I don't get to see the ocean too often.
You mentioned that was one of the exciting things about the journey. So you ended up getting you a whole lot of gear in your bike all the way from Canada down here to Texas, met up with Glenn Cochran, and you guys took off and had just met each other as well. You literally connected online, right?
Well, that's not entirely true. I was with my girlfriend on the motorcycle heading through northern British Columbia to Vancouver Island to hike the West Coast Trail. And we'd stopped for a coffee. It had been rain showers moving through the area, and we were sitting at a roadside coffee shop having something to snack on, and a motorcycle, this huge motorcycle all loaded down with two people on it, came in, pulled right in front of us. And it so happened that it was Glenn Cochran and his wife, Leanne. So we hit it off because motorcycle people have a lot in common, and they like to share stories, and they always have time to visit.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't realize you guys had met in person in Canada beforehand.
Yeah, he was coming down from Alaska. They had run into some bad weather and had a really tough ride up to Prudhoe Bay, Alaska. His wife was originally to travel with him, but they were expecting their first granddaughter, and she decided that that was enough motorcycling for her, and she hightailed it back to Australia. But Glenn wanted to finish up his trip, and I understand that.
Well, and the two of you decided to leave Texas and head down first through Mexico.
Yeah, it was our intention to travel through Central America. We weren't sure how we were going to get around the Darien Gap, because there is no road through from Panama to Colombia. And we ended up taking a boat, the Stall Rat, which is based out of Cartagena, Colombia. And they're in the business of specializing in transporting motorcycles.
So how much time did it take to get from Texas and through Mexico before you ever got down into Central America and had to deal with the gap?
Well, I have to think now. I think we're talking in the range of 5 or 6 months. When we hit Mexico, we both really enjoyed it. We had a lot of fun in Mexico. The people there are so nice. It's so economical to travel there. And it's such a big country. You could easily spend probably close to a year just touring Mexico, but we tried to kind of keep steadily heading south.
Did you make it to Copper Canyon?
We did make it to Copper Canyon, and we were kind of fortunate. They had just put a brand new pavement down through the canyon to a small place called Batapilas, I think it's called.
Cool. I thought it was mostly dirt in the canyon. I've been wanting to go, but been a little bit worried that my skill level wouldn't allow me to really explore the canyon.
Well, when we were there, it's kind of a little bit scary when you get to the rim of the canyon and you look down, you can see, I think I counted 28 switchbacks and hairpins that take you down the canyon.
But it is paved now.
It is paved. Cool. And it was brand spanking new pavement. We just had a riot going down there. Both Glenn and I really enjoyed the twisty roads and the high elevation changes. We're both riding big bikes, and the larger motorcycles have the power. And it was just a real experience going down there, and we really enjoyed it.
Now, you're riding a BMW 1200?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, it is a beautiful bike. It's a bright yellow bike. You know, my son has a theory that people see yellow more, part of why they paint school buses yellow, so that there's a safety factor. So that's a cool thing.
I never really thought of it that way. It's just that that was the bike that I was able to purchase. I bought it secondhand from, oddly enough, the owner of the Harley-Davidson shop in Seattle. Uh-huh. But he was too short to ride it, so he outfitted it for long-distance touring and turned around and sold it. And I've definitely put it to the task. It knows what on-road and it knows what off-road traveling is like now.
Now, how many kilometers have you gone?
Right now, I'm around 62,000 kilometers.
What a distance and what adventures. So you're traveling through Mexico, I'm sure, eating plenty of tacos and queso and traveling through really grand places like Copper Canyon and eventually work your way down more into Central America.
Yeah, the route we chose went through Oaxaca, south to the Pacific coastal plain and back up through San Cristobal, Palenque, came across the Yucatan Peninsula to Merida, out to Cancun and headed south to Belize.
So you went part of the way down on the Pacific coast and then crossed over. Now, did you have to cross over the Andes to get to the other side, or would that be further south?
That's further south. Okay. The Andes is a range, I think, that starts in the South American continent. The mountains in Mexico, I often wondered why they called it Old Mexico, and I thought maybe because geologically it's a very old place. The mountains there are very beaten, wore down by the weather, and it's quite common to see vegetation growing completely covering the entire mountains there. So
also, they're not as rocky looking as some of the American mountain ranges.
Yeah, if you went to Colorado or Montana or up into Canada where you have the Rocky Mountains, well, they are, the tree line maybe goes up to 4,000 or 5,000 feet, and then it's bare rock. Down in Mexico, just about all the areas we traveled, it seems like more like the eastern seaboard, the Appalachian Mountains, where they're very, very old and they're kind of rounded off, and the time and weather has taken their toll on them.
And they're lush and beautiful.
Yeah, very much so, yeah. Yes.
So as you continued south, where'd you go?
Well, we went into Guatemala. Traveling with other people, you can't always get what you want. And I really like Guatemala, and we didn't get to cover the entire country like we did, say, in Belize. I think we were on just about every road that they had in their country. We missed parts of Guatemala. I really enjoyed it. But I mean, you know, when you only have so much time, you have to sort of keep heading south.
Yeah, make an occasional compromise anyway.
Yeah, so Guatemala was a very nice country, and also it was very economical to travel in and very, very nice people. And from there, we made it into El Salvador.
Well, it gives you good reason to go back to Guatemala if you didn't see it all.
Absolutely. I have that written down in my book. The northwest part of Guatemala would be a spot spot that I would like to go back and get to spend more time there.
So at this point, we're fairly far south on this side of the world. And many, many people that are listening this morning, I know, are thinking, oh my goodness, weren't you scared? Weren't there drug lords? How many people pulled guns on you? Were you held for ransom? What were your real feelings when you went through Mexico?
Well, all of those things that you just mentioned, it was a concern. But I have a younger brother who works in the Middle East and lives in Thailand. And we were always so concerned because the stories we hear about the Middle East, the violence, and in Mexico's case, the cartel members and that. And you know, we just never found it. We found the people there to be very friendly, very helpful. And anything that happened to me that was, you know, bad, I could generally trace it back to something that I had done wrong. So I never had any theft of gear, or if I did, it was because I left it out. You know, I didn't.
The same as it would happen in any major U.S. city.
Well, or Canada for that matter. I mean, if you leave your camera sitting on the seat of your motorcycle and go into Walmart to buy groceries, chances are it won't be there when you come out.
Right.
And Mexico is no different that way. Fortunately, in this day and age, you know, we have all the blogs and the forums where motorcycle people talk, and you meet people on the road, and you're always asking about areas. And there are areas in Mexico that are very dangerous. For example, Acapulco these days is not very safe. But I was so fortunate. I met a man with his girlfriend on a Harley Davidson. He was done out in full colors. I mean, he was a real deal. He was a motorcycle member.
A gang member.
Gang member. He rode up beside me. I was traveling alone at this time. And he waved me over to the side of the road. And I was a little apprehensive about that. But we pulled over, parked our bikes. This little short, stout Mexican man jumped off his bike. I'm running over, and I'm like getting a little twitchy. And he threw his arms around me and gave me a big hug. He said, "Brother, how are you doing?"
The camaraderie between motorcyclists.
Yeah, it was so cool. And he invited me to his home in Acapulco. He told me it was a very, very dangerous place, but if I was with him, it would be safe.
So you had your own protector. That
yeah,
is
it was
pretty cool.
Even on the highway, you know, in that part of the world, motorcycles commonly drive between the traffic. Mm-hmm. And when I was following, my bike is very large, and I would never go between the cars.
The split lanes,
it was just too dangerous. But when I was following the man on the Harley, he had it. It was loud. You could hear it like a mile away, that Harley barking. He would stroke the throttle, and they would hear it, and they would see him, and they would just part.
Ah, the parting of the automotive sea.
Yeah, like they just made enough room for a whole car to go by. So there was construction. Instead of waiting for maybe hours to get through all of that, we just zipped right through. So it was kind of nice to have a gang member from Acapulco be my personal tour guide.
A tour guide.
Yeah.
A tour guide and bodyguard. That's cool. Well, and, you know, if you were outside of the United States and you read newspaper reports or watched television news about killings in Detroit or theft or arson or, you know, all the different things that plague some of the major U.S. cities. For that matter, right here in Houston, we have areas of town that it wouldn't be ideal to go walking at night through. And if you read about that, you'd be afraid to come to the U.S. So I've always thought that Mexico was that way, that you need to use caution, learn the terrain, talk to locals, and make sure that you're in a safe area.
Yes, that's absolutely true, Lynn. We had, when we traveled together, and now that I'm alone, I follow the same rules. I don't go out at night. I don't like to drive my motorcycle at night. It's so easy to overdrive your headlights. There's a lot of livestock in these countries, you know, pigs, chickens, you name it, horses, mules, burros, cows. They're wandering around all over the place. Some of the roads are not in the best condition, so there could be potholes that would almost swallow a motorcycle. So there's some basic rules that I followed, and that was to travel during the day. If I went out at night, I would go to, you know, very public places, the town square, where there's lots of people. And I didn't frequent bars. I stayed away from the things that, and as a result, I didn't have any trouble really anywhere.
That's awesome. Yeah. It's so encouraging for everybody that has an adventurous soul that's listening this morning as Steve Willis and I visit about his long travels.
Well, don't go anywhere because we will be right back talking with Steve about his adventure bike travels through South America and into Cuba.
The great outdoors, a set of wheels, and you, the three, are destined to dance. Outdoors with Wheels continues on KPRC 950.
Attention all outdoor adventurers. The wilderness is calling. Wilderness Rider Ranch, that is.
In the rolling mountains of northern Arkansas, the sun lights fire in the sky every morning as the forest wakes up for an adventurous day at the Wilderness Rider Buffalo Ranch and OHV Park.
Just a day's drive from all the hustle, bustle, and madness of the big city, the Wilderness Rider Buffalo Ranch directly adjoins the Buffalo National River Park in the beautiful Boxley Valley Headwaters region, and it is bookended on the west side by the Sweden Creek Nature Preserve. It is some fantastic, one-of-a-kind natural property.
From hiking and mountain biking, climbing, or even off-road exploration on your dirt bike, your dual sport, ATV, side-by-side, or Jeep. Whether you camp by pristine waterfalls and unique natural wonders or enjoy more civilized lodging, your experience while exploring the Wilderness Rider Buffalo Ranch and OHV Park will create memories which last a lifetime. Start your magical vacation at wildernessrider.com.
The trail is calling. Every turn, hill, and fallen log is screaming your name, and you're ready because you have the right type of power and agility to answer the call. Introducing the 2016 Honda Pioneer 1000, available at Cycle Shack North. It sports a best-in-class 999cc engine and the industry's only 6-speed fully automatic dual-clutch transmission. And with 27-inch tires and well over a foot of ground clearance, the Pioneer 1000 gets you places other side-by-sides can't. Plus, with the Pioneer 1005, Honda's exclusive quick flip seats can go from a 3-seater to a 5-seater in seconds. So, no matter what your family is into, hunting, fishing, trail riding, you can do it all and more. Head on down to Cycle Shack North in Conroe and check out a new Honda Pioneer 1000. And don't forget to go big with our huge selection of quality Honda accessories. For your safety, read the owner's manual, wear a helmet and eye protection, always wear your seatbelt, and keep the side nets and doors closed. Pioneers are for drivers 16 years and older.
Finding out what's wrong with your vehicle is simple and convenient at Beckwith's Car Care. Their ASC-certified technicians and professionally trained advisors will help you understand your vehicle and keep it safe and dependable. For everything from oil changes to a new engine, from tire rotations to a check engine light, visit Beckwith's Car Care. Call 281-446-4000. They're on FM 1960, just east of Highway 59. 281-446-4000. Proud sponsor and co-host of the Auto Mojo Show on AM 950 KPRC.
We are screaming through the valley where the nation of botany flows, through the mud and crud and cornfields where the marijuana grows, across the railroad tracks of Persia, down the hills and up the dale, past CJ5 with a four-wheel drive and Smokey on my tail.
Two wheels or four, it doesn't matter. It's all about enjoying the outdoors. Get your tires dirty with Lynn and Donnie as Outdoors with Wheels continues on KPRC 950.
Well, if you've just tuned in with us this morning, we've been talking with Steve Willis. He's a Canadian adventure bike rider who is on an adventure, and he has ridden all the way through North America, down through Mexico, and is now telling us about his adventures in South America.
And don't forget about Cuba.
That's right. He went to Cuba after South America.
Well, Steve actually ended up hopping a boat in Cartagena, South America, and skipping up through islands, including Jamaica and Cuba, and eventually back to Cancun, Mexico. And then he weaved his way back to Texas to visit with us.
Now that is an adventure ride.
Well, whether you ride a motorcycle or not, you are going to love hearing Steve's stories, because you don't have to do this on a motorcycle. There's other ways to travel, but there are some strong messages about getting to know the people, the locals, anywhere you go, and how much that will enrich enrich both yours and their lives.
Well, I would say if you want to follow the exact track Steve took, you better have a motorcycle.
Yes, that is true. That is true. It's so encouraging for everybody that has an adventurous soul that's listening this morning as Steve Willis and I visit about his long travels. It's been 15 months?
Yes. Yeah. It was never planned that way, but it's sort of unfolding that way.
So you continued on south and ultimately made it all the way down to the very tip of South America to Ushuaia.
That's
correct. Did I say that right? Is it Ushuaia?
Yeah, Ushuaia. I believe so.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What was that like? Because from that tip, can you see Antarctica or is it still too much distance to see Antarctica?
No, it's still a long ways away and it's in a maze of islands. So Ushuaia is the most southerly city in the world. You can't drive, I don't think, any further south anywhere else on the planet. And it's the staging area and disembarkation for all of the boats that take tourists to Antarctica. So it's one of the major spots where if you wanted to go to Antarctica, that would be one of the spots. Punta Arenas, Chile, would be the other spot on the Strait of Magellan. I thought maybe, I arrived in Ushuaia on October 1st, 2016, and that was the first day that the boats started operating their tours down to Antarctica.
Because the seasons are reversed. That's actually the beginning of their summer.
Correct, correct. And I thought maybe that I was in the off season, there would maybe be a boat leaving that had a few extra berths that you could get for a bargain. And I found that out to be not true.
Pretty expensive travel.
The packages start at 10,000 US and they go right up to 40,000 US depending on the type of boat that you want, and that was kind of a lot out of my budget, so I had to pass on that.
Well, there are probably less expensive ways to go see really big blocks of ice, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
In Alaska or other places.
That's for sure, yes.
Yeah.
In Argentina, on the mainland, there's beautiful, beautiful glaciers at the Merino National Park, and lots in Chile, too. It's really spectacular, the mountains down there, and the elevations that you get to are quite incredible.
So your girlfriend Valerie actually flew down from Canada and joined you for part of your journey. Where did you guys go?
We started in Santiago, Chile. We ended up in Buenos Aires, Argentina. And we traveled through northern Argentina and northeastern Argentina up to the Iguazu Falls. And it's kind of at the juncture where Paraguay, Brazil, and Argentina meet. The Paraná River, there's a couple of huge rivers.
So the Paraná River, as in it's full of piranha?
I think it is, probably.
Probably so, yeah.
They call it that. It's a huge, huge river.
No skinny dipping in the Paraná River, right?
Well, no, they do. They really? Do. Absolutely, they do. We actually had an instance in Colombia where we were swimming. We were invited to a farm, and there was a small river. It was a hot, humid day, and we went into the river, and you could feel these like little nibbling things on you. Glenn actually had a little chunk of his hide chewed away on his chest, and he was bleeding. Leaning, and there was actually a little piranha fish chewing away on it.
Oh, little bitty bitty one.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, I think I'll stick with sunfish.
Yeah. We traveled across from Chile into Argentina and swung down through Uruguay and back into Buenos Aires, Argentina, and at which point she flew home. And the Paraná River actually comes down from the Iguazu Falls and exits into the Atlantic Ocean at Buenos Aires. And at that point, it's the widest river in the world.
Oh, that is cool.
It is huge. It's like well over 100 kilometers wide.
So it's flowing out of the Amazon, would that be correct? Is the Amazon all just above that?
No, it's a different watershed. The Amazon River is north of there in Brazil. Mm-hmm. And that's the huge, huge drainage basin that drains from, you know, countries like Bolivia, Peru, Ecuador. It's a huge, huge basin that feeds into the Amazon River, and the Paraná is probably the next large water system below the Amazon.
Yeah. I can only imagine all of the natural wonders that you've encountered, and of course, all of the amazing people you've encountered. I'm particularly impressed with how much you remember of the geography, the names. I think it would all blur to me. I would love every moment, but it would all become this giant puddle of cool places.
Well, yeah, it does. But there's some places that, you know, you just will never forget. Valerie and I, we had met some people at a town in northern Argentina on our way to the Iguazu Falls. They owned a family hotel. And Valerie told me, she said, I feel like I'm connected to this woman. She seems so nice. Not only did we stay in their hotel, but they had their family over and they staged several large dinners so that we could all meet their family, and we had barbacoa, and they introduced us to the Argentinian culture. One of her daughters was married. They had these two beautiful little girls. The father of the two little girls was a truck driver, and he mentioned to us that there was a motorcycle rally going on in a small place called Diamante. I felt compelled to go and check this out.
To see what an Argentinian motorcycle rally is like.
Yeah, yeah. And it was really surprising. I wasn't really prepared for what it was, but there was over 20,000 motorcycles there.
Now, were most of them Harleys even
no,
in Argentina?
Most of them were Honda 125s with no mufflers on them or Suzukis or whatever. But there were lots of Harleys. There was lots of motorcycles manufactured all over the world. But it turned out that Valerie and I were the motorcycle riders who attended their rally, and we were presented an award for being the furthest away.
Coming the furthest distance.
To attend their rally. And it was so cool. The committee that staged the event, they had us up on stage after the Imitation AC/DC band was playing, and there was like, I don't know how many people, but I have pictures, and as far as you could see, there was Argentinians with a beer in their hand, and they were all cheering, and they presented us an award. It was really a special time, and they treated us very, very nicely there. They provided us with a young man from university who could translate for us, and they took us around to all the events, and they had Valerie offered her a free massage massage tent.
So it's not a lot different than an American motorcycle rally, I don't think. A whole lot of motorcyclists from sometimes very far away gathering to enjoy each other's company.
Most of these were from Brazil and Argentina and Chile.
And a whole lot different style bike than we normally encounter here.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, the people, motorcycle people seem like they're the same wherever you go. I mean, they're so welcoming. Our translator, his name was Juan. He was a psychologist major in university. He was just finishing up. We were welcomed into this camping area where a whole family, they'd been going to this rally for like 16 years in a row. Aww. And it was a yearly big event, sort of maybe like the 4th of July here in the States.
It was their family vacation, and you got to be part of it. That's
yeah.
really special.
And they brought us all in. They fed us. They insisted we come back. They told us their stories, and they wanted to know about our stories, and they just make you feel like you're part of the family. It was really special.
That's awesome. Now, you met another special person. Was it in Argentina that you met Antonio Braga?
No. Antonio Braga is a man who originally was born and raised in Brazil, and some 40 years ago, he moved to Mexico, and he now lives in Oaxaca, Mexico.
Okay.
I met Antonio on my way home on the Stalrat boat. I decided to book myself passage from Cartagena, Colombia to Jamaica for 2 weeks. From Jamaica, we went to Cuba for 4 weeks. And then after that, the boat waited for us and they sailed over to Cancun, Mexico. This is where I met Antonio Braga. He's 80 years old. He's still riding a motorcycle. He had his motorcycle on the boat. He was down in Brazil visiting his girlfriend, and he was heading home. That's how I met Antonio. I was on the boat.
So this was your second time on the Stalrat?
Yes, yes.
So first time was around the Darien Gap to get into South America, into Cartagena. And then as you rode back up, you had a really nice adventure. What was Cuba like?
Cuba was, it's hard for me to explain. I want to say it was strange, but I also want to say that it was wonderful. It's like a country that was frozen in time some 30, 40, maybe even 50 years ago. it's a country of huge contradictions there. You see what we'd call poverty, not that nice of housing, not that many cars. For example, I was at a Casa Particular one afternoon. I was writing my blog and I decided to go out on the terrace and sit there in the sun, and I counted traffic. Just, I don't know why, but I counted traffic. And out of the 80 vehicles that went by in the time period, 62 of them, I think, were horse-drawn carts.
Oh, wow. That many horses still. And then I also understand the vehicles that are there are stuck in time, that a lot of them are very old American iron.
Oh, yeah. It was wonderful. I mean, driving down these roads and you see this huge Oldsmobile, you know, driving down the road, or a Chevy Bel Air. They're truly classic, classic cars. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it. But the closer you look at them, they're not really American cars anymore. Most of them have diesel engines in them. Huge chunks of their bodies have probably long since been rusted away. And the Cubans are so ingenuous. I mean, they make fenders. I watched an artisan, I think it was a Chevy Bel Air. He had the trunk open and the lip where the weather stripping clipped onto had all been rusted away. And they had cut that all out and they had fabricated a new U-shaped piece of metal, and they were in the process of welding it in.
Artful metal workers. That's awesome.
It's unreal what they do there. If you're a type of person who enjoys inventions, when people have a need to do something and they just pick up scraps and pieces, the Cubans, that's what they do, and they do it very well, is they'll make a machine to help them with what they need to do.
They've had decades with the embargo of having to make do with what is currently on the island and make whatever they need out of it. We are visiting with Steve Willis, who has been on a very long journey through Mexico, Central, South America, and has recently gotten back up into the Texas area. And one of the things Steve and I are talking about right now is Cuba and his trip to Cuba. And I've been fascinated by how for all these years they've had to make do. You showed me some pictures, and we'll definitely share those at outdoorswithwheels.com, where they've taken the backside of an Oldsmobile and cut most of it away and turned it into transportation for multiple people.
Yeah, there'll be like a bench. You'll see the front doors. They've cut away the back seat and the trunk. They've left the side panels, you know, the huge, nice big fins.
Beautiful fins, yeah.
And then they've installed benches on either side, so they can fit like 14 people into the back of this huge Buick car. And it looks so funky because you're thinking, like, where did they make that at?
That's the Buick bus. But you know what's interesting, and you just mentioned this, I think it's fascinating that instead of just cutting the back end off and tying some sort of a bus chassis into it, they've kept the fins. They've kept the art and the glamour of these old cars.
They love the American classic cars. They are so proud of them, and they're worth a lot of money, they claim. They are so proud of those American cars. So I asked about them, and some of them have as many as 3 million miles on them.
Ooh.
So they've been totally rebuilt. Some of the cars are just a car body that's been put on a truck chassis. I mean, in Cuba, you really have to look. One day I was on the road. I put on nearly 5,000 kilometers in Cuba in 4 weeks.
That's a lot of riding in a month's time.
Yeah. Actually, it was a little less than that. But I wanted to go from one end of the island to the other and see as much as I could. And Cuba is almost 1,200 kilometers long. So it's a lot of distance. It is a lot.
And there's a lot of varied terrain in Cuba, aren't there? There's some mountain ranges.
Yes, there is. Yeah.
Of course, a lot of beach and ocean front.
Yes, there is. And I just wanted to mention about the vehicles. I was riding down the highway and I looked down and I was going 100 kilometers per hour. And there was this tractor and I wasn't catching up to it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking, how can a tractor go 100 kilometers an hour? So I ended up getting up beside him and waving at him and asking him if he could pull over. And oddly enough, they did. They were really interested in my motorcycle. They have never, ever, anyone in Cuba seen these huge motorcycles that we ride.
Now, they have mostly scooters, and Harley's made a bit of a presence over there.
Yeah, I never saw a Harley while I was there,
really?
But I heard that you can rent them and drive around the island. I never really seen anything other than really small motorcycles. And oddly enough, a lot of electric scooters and electric motorcycles.
Really?
Like, more than anywhere else that I've traveled to.
Now, were they manufactured as electric motorcycles, or are these modifications they've made with electric motors?
These were manufactured.
Oh, so they're relatively new.
Yeah, and they're really cheap. They're half the price, say, a Honda 125 or a Yamaha 110, less than half the price. I think the government there probably brought like a whole container ship of these.
From China, probably.
Yeah, from a little electric scooters. And you see them everywhere you go. The tractor, I found out, wasn't really a tractor at all. It was the oddest vehicle I've ever seen. It had the hood from, a 46 Mercury truck on it. It had big front wheel assist looking front end and then big tractor tires on the back. But upon closer look, it was really a truck chassis. It had a tractor cab, a truck hood. It had all these parts, and they were just melded together into
this new atrocity that worked very well, it sounds like.
Yeah, public transportation there is in short supply, it seems, because quite often you'll see a truck that was made to haul sugarcane, and then they quickly put some modifications to it and they turn it into a bus with stairs hanging out the corner, and people jump onto these and they're standing in there. There's not even
just standing in the back of a truck.
Yeah, you drive by them and you see all these heads and noses pointed out the side of the truck. So it seems like there's a huge shortage of public transportation there.
And multi-use of vehicles. And to get that many miles out of vehicles for all of the Texans here that are trading in their vehicle every 3 years before it hits 80,000 miles, it is a lesson that even here in the U.S., with even reasonable maintenance, getting 500,000 miles is easy.
It's really amazing. It's a strange place to be, to see these classic American cars that have been highly modified and worked over and still running, and they run every day.
Did the gentleman with the modified tractor tell you what type motor he has in it?
It was an air-cooled diesel motor out of an East German tractor.
Huh. So it was a tractor motor. It was just powerful.
It was a tractor motor, but it had a truck transmission and differential. And you could see at the frame, they actually made the frame out of old truck chassis they had or whatever. It was very, very interesting. In Cuba, I guess it's fair to say, when you look at something, you have to look at it very carefully, because more often than not, it's not what it appears to be. What looks like a 57 Chevy Bel Air is a 57 Chevy Bel Air body on a truck chassis with a diesel motor. They've even put in power windows and power door locks.
Oh, wow.
Which I'm sure that wasn't stock equipment in 1957.
Definitely not. So it's a bit beyond the necessity, even.
Yeah.
They're quite inventive.
I talked to a man who was doing maintenance one, and it had disc brakes all the way around. So it's quite a strange and wonderful place, really. That's best how I can describe it.
You know, we have got to get down there and travel through Cuba while it's still so fine and funky.
Yes, indeed, we do. I have been studying my Spanish.
Well, I can't say I've been doing much of that, but I've been studying my writing. Well, stay with us, folks. We will be talking more with Steve soon as we get back about his travels through Bolivia.
The great outdoors, a set of wheels, and you, the three, are destined to dance. Outdoors with Wheels continues on KPRC 950.
The trail is calling. Every turn, hill, and fallen log is screaming your name, and you're ready because you have the right type of power and agility to answer the call. Introducing the 2016 Honda Pioneer 1000, available at Cycle Shack North. It sports a best-in-class 999cc engine and the industry's only 6-speed fully automatic dual-clutch transmission. And with 27-inch tires and well over a foot of ground clearance, the Pioneer 1000 gets you places other side-by-sides can't. Plus, with the Pioneer Pioneer 1005 Honda's exclusive quick flip seats can go from a three-seater to a five-seater in seconds. So no matter what your family is into, hunting, fishing, trail riding, you can do it all and more. Head on down to Cycle Shack North in Conroe and check out a new Honda Pioneer 1000. And don't forget to go big with our huge selection of quality Honda accessories. For your safety, read the owner's manual, wear a helmet and eye protection, always wear your seatbelt, and keep the side nets and doors closed. Pioneers are for drivers 16 years and older.
Finding out what's wrong with your vehicle is simple and convenient at Beckwith's Car Care. Their ASC-certified technicians and professionally trained advisors will help you understand your vehicle and keep it safe and dependable. For everything from oil changes to a new engine, from tire rotations to a check engine light, visit Beckwith's Car Care. Call 281-446-4000. They're on FM 1960, just east of Highway 59. 281-446-4000. Proud sponsor and co-host of the Auto Mojo Show on AM 950 KPRC.
We are screaming through the valley where the nation of botany flows, through the mud and crud and cornfields where the marijuana grows, across the railroad tracks of Persia, down the hills and up the dale. That's CJ5 with a four-wheel drive, Smokey on my tail.
Two wheels or four, it doesn't matter. It's all about enjoying the outdoors. Get your tires dirty with Lynn and Donnie as Outdoors with Wheels continues on KPRC 950.
Okay, so the mic's back on, Steve, because you were sharing off-air just a moment ago the most amazing story. Where were you at when this occurred?
Oh, I was in Bolivia. I was on the internet, and I thought, well, it'd be nice to go to the highest mountain in Bolivia. I had no idea where that was or what it was called, so I just Googled it, and it said it was Mount Sayama in the central western part of Bolivia.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how I travel. I decided I wanted to go to the highest point in Bolivia, so I jumped on my bike and I left La Paz. I didn't much like La Paz, but I made my way to Mount Sayama and I camped there. It's a very remote place. There's no pavement. There's a lot of off-road motorcycling to get to it through the Altiplano, and it's at a very high altitude.
High altitude and very much countryside.
I was freaked out because I'm going down the road and there's this half a mile of dust rocketing out the back of my motorcycle, and these huge birds, I thought they were ostriches, come running out through the desert, and they're native Enos or birds that uh-huh. live up there, and there's alpaca, and those animals live there. And I made my way to a village, and I spent the night there. And right at the base of Sayama, I got some wonderful, wonderful pictures of the mountain. Turns out they were having a community gathering in the hall, so we all went there, and they were sharing their alcoholic beverages with us, which were, I have to say, not that good, but we all
invited anyway, right?
When said in Rome, it was or, good.
Or Bolivia, you do as they do, yeah.
Yeah, and we ate alpaca meat and their traditional foods, and we watched them dance, and it was wonderful to see them. They're all dressed up in their finest traditional clothing. And we got talking to actually a lady from France who spoke good English, and she was telling me that it was a fascinating place. In La Paz, Bolivia, the elevation of the city is very high. And in South America, Central America, as you all know, soccer is a huge, huge big deal down there. It is huge. The FIFA, the governing body of soccer worldwide, had banned FIFA-sanctioned games and tournaments in La Paz.
Because of the elevation.
Exactly. The teams were coming in from Europe to play Bolivia or from other spots in Central America, and the teams were struggling because they weren't acclimatized to the elevation, and they were getting their butts kicked. So
the teams that were all naturally there.
Yeah, from the teams from Bolivia and that were acclimatized to the elevation. So in Sayama, where I was, the connection to this story is that all of the local guides and the community members, they climbed up Sayama, three quarters of the way up onto the glaciers, uh-huh. and they had a game of soccer up there in protest.
Oh, just to prove that it could be done.
That's correct, yeah. That was their protest.
The
highest mountain in the country. They'd climbed up, you know, nearly to the top and had a game of soccer to protest.
What a statement about how important sports are, and soccer in particular.
Exactly. It was a wonderful place. I stayed in a mud brick house, And I thought it was strange. The lady came in and was trying to, she had a stick broom and she was trying to clean it up. And I thought it was kind of strange because it was a dirt floor.
Sweeping the dirt off the dirt?
Yeah. Sort of mix it in, I guess, was the idea.
Level it out, maybe. Yeah.
It was very cold up there. It was such an elevation. And my water jug on the side of my bike that was frozen solid the next morning. I decided to leave and I was heading out. And on the way in, I noticed there was a wonderful, wonderful valley that had some water, a creek stream running through the bottom of the stream, and it had separated into many, many different channels, and it looked quite wonderful from the elevation looking down. And in the morning when it was cold and it was really, really below zero, I decided that I wanted to get some pictures of that. Because I noticed as I drove along the edge, the rim of the canyon, that it had all frozen solid.
And the sunlight was actually making it down through the canopy into that valley.
Yeah, the valley was, you know, we're above 10,000 feet at the valley. It was still very high. All these little streams were this beautiful turquoise blue sort of clear ice, and I thought, what a wonderful picture that would be. So I'm kind of looking, and I'm driving along looking for a place where I could safely pull over, and I notice a little girl standing on the road, and she's got her hand out like
waving,
like she's trying to flag down a taxi. You know, they always go like flop their hand up and down if they want a ride or for the bus to pull over.
No thumbs, huh? They don't hitchhike with thumbs?
No, just their hands flapping in the wind, and I knew that, you know, that was, as much as I would like to give the little girl a ride, that it was probably not appropriate. And in their culture, it's best for me to keep to myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I did see a place maybe 200 meters down the road where I could safely pull over and get my camera out and try to catch those images that look so fantastic.
Yeah, kind of magical, yeah.
To my eye. And so I'm taking pictures, and as I'm doing this, I feel a tug on my coat. And here that little girl had ran 200 meters up the road, and she was insistent. She wanted to ride to school. And I looked at her. She was just a cute little thing, maybe 5-6 years old. Uh-huh. And I thought, well, I'm going to throw caution to the wind. I'm going to give her a ride. So she had
a
little backpack on with her books, and I got her to put it on backwards, and I lifted her up, set her on the bike, and I swung my leg in, and I had her squished between my belly and the tank bag.
Uh-huh.
And she didn't speak English, but she was giving me directions. You could see her little hand sticking up saying, which way to go. So it was about 5 or 6 kilometers, and we got to a small village, and I looked, and up on the hill was a school, and all the kids were out playing, and they seen us pull up on the motorcycle, and all the kids stopped playing, and they all lined up. They couldn't believe the little girl was on this monstrous motorcycle in
their
village.
She was a popular little girl.
She was the star of the show. So there was two men out there, and that was what I was worried about. So I made a point of beeping my horn and waving at them, and they were smiling and waving. So I felt right away that it was cool. And so I took the little girl, I set her down, I got off the bike, and I have some pictures of this little girl. All you could see is white teeth. She was smiling from
ear to ear.
And when she took her bag and she walked up, all of her friends come running to her and they wanted to know. I give her some hard candies to take to her friends. And she was a celebrity that morning at school. It felt so good to see this little girl so happy. And I think I maybe made her day.
I think you did too. What a great day that must have been. And as you mentioned, the people you've met on this very long journey are indeed the magic and the charm that have made it worth the hardships you've endured. We haven't talked a lot about that. We may save that for a different day, but certainly all those months of traveling on a motorcycle with minimal supplies is not easy, is it?
It's not. It's not easy. It's physically demanding, but it's very rewarding. You know, having said that, it's very rewarding. And some of my fondest memories involve the children. They're so innocent and curious, and they just kind of bring out the best in me.
That's fabulous.
Well, yes.
Thank you so much for sharing this very special story about your journey.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. It was a pleasure being here.
Can I tell everybody your eyes are tearing up?
Yeah, it does. It does sort of make me feel so blessed that I've had the opportunity to do this. Yes.
A lot of emotions.
Yes.
A lot of emotions.
Yeah.
Well, safe riding. Happy riding.
Thank you.
Be sure to join us next week. We're going to speak more with Steve about what it was like traveling through Cuba.
At one point, Steve mentioned that Cuba was stuck in time and part of what we talk about next week has a little bit to do about politics. It has a little bit to do about happiness. It has a little bit to do about families. But it certainly is a huge cultural statement about the differences between the people that have been in Cuba all these years compared to our lifestyle here in America.
Well, Steve brought back a big collection of interesting pictures and interesting stories, so you'll have to join us.
Be sure to visit OutdoorsWithWheels.com. Of course, if you missed the earlier part of this show, you can catch up with podcasts on our website as well. Send us an email with ideas or suggestions. It is info@outdoorswithwheels.com.
And once again, thanks for joining us. Now get out there and make your own adventure.
Happy riding, everybody.
Happy four-wheeling.
Outdoors with Wheels has Lynn and Donnie bring you another informative and entertaining show. Thank you for listening. Now, head into the great outdoors. Get those tires dirty and get your mind right.
The trail is calling. Every turn, hill, and fallen log is screaming your name, and you're ready because you have the right type of power and agility to answer the call. Introducing the 2016 Honda Pioneer 1000, available at Cycle Shack North. It sports a best-in-class 999cc engine and the industry's only 6-speed fully automatic dual-clutch transmission. And with 27-inch tires and well over a foot of ground clearance, the Pioneer 1000 gets you places other side-by-sides can't. Plus, with the Pioneer 1005, Honda's exclusive quick flip seats can go from a 3-seater to a 5-seater in seconds. So, no matter what your family is into, hunting, fishing, trail riding, you can do it all and more. Head on down to Cycle Shack North in Conroe and check out a new Honda Pioneer 1000. And don't forget to go big with our huge selection of quality Honda accessories. For your safety, read the owner's manual, wear a helmet and eye protection, always wear your seatbelt, and keep the side nets and doors closed. Pioneers are for drivers 16 years and older.